And we end today with some old friends, more prize winners, who published books for kids and us. The stars of these stories are quite unexpected. One of the last ones featured the germ in the guts of a nurse in World War I. This time it's Nema. Yes, a nematode worm. Why bother? Because it's a work of art. Meet Greg Crocetti and Bryony Barr, deep down in the soils of Melbourne.
Nema is a entomopathogenic nematode, which means it's a entomo refers to insect, so it's a pathogen, a nematode that parasitizes insects.
And you expect that to be understood by a 10-year-old?
Once they've read the book, yeah.
Yeah, once they've read the book in story format, they will understand it.
Bryony, how do you know this? Have you tested it?
Yeah, we did. So prior to publishing, as part of the storybook series, we go to groups of school children of different types of schools, different age groups, and read through an early draft. And we ask them lots of questions, get their feedback, tell them to be really honest, ask them, tell us when you don't get something, and tell us what doesn't make sense for you. So, yes, we did. And we got great response. We got good feedback, which we've implemented. But, yeah, they do tell us what they think. And that's
and
really
it's all
important.
About the soil full of germs. And I've said this any number of times before, but if you have two handfuls of wet soil and you were to count the numbers of microorganisms, it's equivalent to all the people who have ever lived on Earth.
Precisely.
About 8 billion, one huge cupped handful.
Yeah, I think it's the most, my understanding is it's the most biodiverse ecosystem on Earth. Healthy soil is the most biodiverse. People don't think of it that way. They think of it as dirt.
And that handful of soil has kilometres and kilometres of fungal threads as well. Like that's going to be our next story.
But mycelia.
Mycelia, exactly.
We once had a program on that a few weeks ago about what's called the wood wide web.
Oh, yeah. Very cool, yeah.
Underneath, without which most of the things we see above the soil couldn't exist.
Mm. Yeah, and our next story actually in the Small Friends book series is told by a fungal spore who becomes part of the wood wide web.
What we thought before we get to that, because the mycelia is quite magical, but nematodes kind of have a bad reputation. I mean, there's, 60-odd species that parasitize humans, you know, whipworms, pinworms, hookworms, all of those nasty sorts of things. And even elephantiasis, the classic, is a nematode.
Where your legs swell up like great big balloons.
That whole
squelch.
Thing. They have a bit of a bad reputation, but they couldn't be more vital in the nutrient cycling in soil because the nematodes are the master devourers of everything. They're one of the earliest animals. They represent, amazingly, a paper came out recently that suggested they represent 80% of all animals on Earth. Just to take that in. Of all of the different types of animals we can imagine, 4 out of 5 of them are nematodes. Now, admittedly, nematodes are tiny, so, you know, they can make up a lot without being very much. But that's just quite extraordinary. And they've learned to eat everything in soil. They eat bacteria, archaea, fungi, protozoa, algae.
Most of those are clear, but archaea, what does that mean? It means very ancient, does it, or what?
It kind of suggests that potentially bacteria are more ancient, but they're akin to bacteria in that they're single-celled prokaryotes. They're single-celled microbes.
But they're extremophiles, so they like more extreme environments like volcanoes and hydrothermal events and things like that.
That's their reputation. I mean, yeah. They make methane, they do those sorts of things. But yeah, archaea are one of the three domains of life. So it's important to mention them whenever you mention bacteria a lot of the time. Although archaea, strangely, never caught. There's no pathogens of humans.
But another interesting fact about nematodes is I understand that they were the first animal to evolve not just a mouth and a digestive tract, but also an anus. So important for being able to excrete.
The invention of the
recycle.
Anus, a turning point in world history.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
Important development.
But that anus is vital to soil because the nematodes eat everything, including other nematodes, and nematodes specialize for everything. And it's what they poo out into the soil, along with the larger things that eat the nematodes, that's turning over all of that carbon and nitrogen and phosphorus that then feeds back. That's bioavailable, ready for plants. So that's the food for plants right there one of the main food sources is those excretions.
Back to the book. First of all, it's beautiful. The pictures.
Thank you.
The images. The colours.
Credit for the illustrations goes to Aviva Reed, who's an artist and visual ecologist. And yeah, she does an amazing job of bringing that world to life.
But absolutely. Getting a story out of that, how difficult was it then, Bryony?
Well, I mean, it's always difficult to produce and to bring together lots of different artists and scientists and synthesize the story. But I think the initial seed of the story came through a conversation with a nematologist, Patricia Stock, who's actually a co-author on the book. We were at the Symbiosis Conference a few years ago in Lisbon, and we were sitting and having lunch with her, and she said, "I've got a story for you." And she basically described the life cycle of this entomopathic nematode, you know, starting with a distress call from a tree. And the story really just, it flowed from that seed and using that life cycle as a backbone. But the story was fleshed out, you know, the drama and who the storyteller is and the sort of the pacing of the story that was developed through, you know, taking the science and working with Alsa Wild, our lead story writer, to really, you know, create the drama around it and make it a story that people can really get inside.
How do you make a distress call if you're a worm?
No, well, the distress call comes from the plant. And this is the amazing link that Patricia Stock made.
Because it feels pain, you wrote in the book.
Yeah.
A plant feels pain.
Well, that's a little bit of artistic license, I suppose.
It certainly sends out a distress signal, and it's aware that it's being chewed by a grub. So that's the start of the story.
We're learning more every year about the amazing abilities of plants to communicate, not just above ground with pheromones, but also below ground through their mycelia. They can communicate through their fungal partners. But also below ground, if something like a grub bites onto a root, they'll release a volatile organic compound, a distress signal. And the nematodes, like Nema in the story, have evolved the ability to pick up on this. It's a co-evolution with plants, really, because a call has to be responded to. And the nematodes pick up on this. They have an extraordinary sense of smell, and they'll respond to these little molecules and follow the trail to the source, which will be the roots that are being gnawed upon. And it won't typically be one grub. There'll be where there's a clutch of eggs lay, there'll be many. And the nematode will come, travel through the soil, following this chemical gradient, and find a reward. And it's a beautiful symbiosis. Like for us, we thought the symbiosis was initially was maybe just this, the nematode and its bacterial passengers, these amazing Xenorhabditis bacteria. But the plant is part of this whole story as well. It's quite extraordinary.
I don't want to spoil the story, but once the nematodes do crawl inside the grub and start the sort of reproduction cycle, there's a switch that happens between the nematodes and their bacterial passengers. So initially the Xenorhabditis sort of set up the conditions for the nematodes to have a sort of safe place to reproduce, but then they become food for the nematodes. So there's a sort of switch within the symbiosis. And then once the multiple generations of nematodes have reproduced inside this dead grub, they then swallow the Xenorhabditis bacteria again, but they don't digest them. They twist a pocket inside their gut, I believe.
Yeah, the top of their intestine.
And then bust out of the grub and off they go again to find a new potential insect to reproduce inside
Another part of the co-evolution.
It's pretty amazing.
It's another part of that co-evolution, really, is how the nematodes and bacteria can coexist, that the nematodes have this special little pouch to hold them when they travel through the soil, and that they can then untwist and then release them, poo them essentially out into the grub at the start of the story. So it's this beautiful sort of hold and release as well that goes on between the nematode and their bacterial passengers.
This is the new Game of Thrones, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Except on a microscopic scale.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got all the drama, all the amazing dragon-like creatures, the pitiless way that innocents are gobbled up, and communication, some heroes, you get to love the heroes, and doing, they're dead.
Absolutely. The soil is, as Elsa says, the writer, the soil is a treasure trove of literary inspiration.
When you went to see the children, how much did they know about soil at all?
Not much.
No, not much.
Not much. I think it's a big gap in people's knowledge, most people's knowledge, not just children. And, you know, the story brings you into the soil. So you sort of become a character, I guess, in the soil. And it starts to give you a sense of the life and the drama that's happening that we tend to not know much about.
Nema and the Xenos, a story of soil cycles, published by Small Friends Books and CSIRO. Greg Crocetti is a microbiologist and Bryony Barr is art director, and last month they won the Whiteley Award from the Zoological Society of New South Wales, the first children's book to do so. More books next week. The Science Show is produced by David Fisher and Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. I'm Robin Williams. Thank you.